The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Now, look, as we've alluded to, I think a lot of us kind of surprisingly in a way find ourselves reflecting a bit on this weekend, on the last 2 years and on what we've all been through. So to do just that now, I'm joined on the line by journalist and commentator Olivia O'Leary and the grand dame of the Irish theatre, Rosaline Linehan. And in studio with me is Finian McGrath, former independent TD for Dublin Bay North and, of course, former Minister for State for Disability Issues. Good afternoon, everybody. You're all very welcome.
Good afternoon, Brendan. Great to be here.
Olivia, just to give us the overview, you would say there were three lockdowns, really, and all of a slightly different character.
Yeah, they were. I mean, the first one, really, we were afraid that society itself would break down. I mean, there was great fear because we didn't know what was coming. And, you know, you had, I know it sounds a bit mad, but you had notions of what if the police end up getting sick? What about if there's no food and you have gangs marauding, you know, raiding people's houses for food because they're hungry? You know, what if all the structures that we take for granted are gone? And, you know, you were very conscious. I mean, how secure were you in your own home? And none of that happened. God bless them. The police were there. The postmen came. My postman, Shane, left a little note in to say, if you're stuck and you need anything collected from the shop or the pharmacy, give me a ring. You know, there was all of that. And little by little, you began to feel, OK, it's going to be boring and awful, but we're not going to hopefully die of anything other than COVID. So I think that was a great revelation in the first one, and the government stepped in and made sure that people who had to stop working were supported. So all of those supports came into place, and you were suddenly conscious, Brendan, of how lucky you were to live in a democratic state where there was some sort of safety net for people. Okay, not as good as we would want, but suddenly that stuff that you never look at, the structure of law and order, the delivery of food, the delivery of post, all of those connections suddenly came like a skeleton. You could see it.
The centre held.
Yeah.
And then I suppose the second one you would say was the one arising out of the meaningful Christmas then. That was a different texture again, Olivia.
It was, but do you know, I can understand why the politicians allowed people to meet. The thing I don't forgive is the opening up of restaurants and pubs that particular Christmas. I don't think that was necessary. But I know myself that over that Christmas, some of us who hadn't seen one another, one particularly vulnerable person in my family, and she hadn't seen any of us for a year. Now, that saved our lives in a way, you know, and it re-established relationships, and it was really, really, really important. However, the too early opening up of hospitality, I thought that was giving in to political pressures, and I still find that a bit hard to forgive.
Okay, and then I suppose, was it October again then of last year we kind of started again into restrictions?
Yeah, and I found this the hardest. I was more frightened first time out, but this last one I found the hardest. I found I got more down. I found I missed the champagne of people and friends. I found that I didn't find it as easy to motivate myself to do the things that, you know, I would usually do at home.
So you became less connected in that one, did you?
Yeah, I did. I did, and I could feel myself getting down. I could feel myself having to bring into operation all the little machinations that get you up, out of bed, moving, running. You know, I found I was very consciously having to bring those into play. And I think an awful lot of people who might have had tendencies to melancholia, as they say, probably found this last lockdown hard to take because you weren't sure whether we were going to come out of it, and you got used to being disappointed. That's always dangerous when you get used to being disappointed. And I hoped, goodness, we're not going to be disappointed again.
We all do here. Rosaline, it's remarkable when Olivia reminds us of that first lockdown there. Do you remember the first? It seems like another world now, but they were kind of innocent times in a way, weren't they?
It was extraordinary because my eldest son suddenly possibly because he works in your media world, Hughie, kind of in February started telling the others, you need to look, get Mammy in some tinned food and a lot of flour, you see. This was not my usual scene. But in fact, they were saying, oh, God, Hugh's fussing as usual, you know. But in fact, he was being quite a bit of premonition. And I always
did thought, he get you some toilet paper?
He never bothered with that. That's a place I sing about, but nothing else. I always had on my desk, I had this little thing that said, age doesn't matter unless you're a cheese. And that, after this, I add on, or in a pandemic.
Yeah.
You've got, it does matter very much so. And like Olivia really struck a bell there, because it was the last one that really killed me.
Was it?
And I also had, I have all these little things. They all say, oh, Mammy's on one of her aphorisms again. It was, one of these ones is, a good sense of decorum can stop you blowing your brains out. And I don't have a good sense of decorum. I've never had one. I'm always being a bit wild. So I lost some really beloved people during that time, and that added to it, and it was just shocking.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that maybe, I wondered, you know, other people suffer from this one, particularly in the last session, but even during the others as well. I'd be going around quite happy around the place and fiddling, doing my things, and suddenly what I can only describe as lemonade in my nose would start off, like a bit of sort of busy in my nose, and then I would start to cry for apparently no reason whatsoever.
Micro cries, my wife used to call them.
God, isn't that funny?
That's brought me right back now. Yeah, yeah. And suddenly it would all crash in for a minute or something. It would just,
and then you'd say to yourself, I'm really not very well.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And of course, Rosalind, we were up and down like yo-yos, really, weren't we?
Oh, up and down. And funnily enough, it was kind of one day up, one day down. Sort of good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
Good day, bad cop. But it was definitely like that as well. But the amount of support, as Olivia says, was just massive from family. And I have 5 nieces that I will be ever. You know, the first one was great because I got a lot of free food, very nice food, good cooks, things hanging on the handle at the door. I have no side entrance to the house, so everything was in the front garden. So if I didn't get out quick, other people, birds would eat them. But I had loads of gorgeous food and loads of company, and that was great. Mind you, they go off you after a while. And my best friend rang every single morning.
We could only keep
morning.
That crack up for so long, yeah.
Yeah, best friend rang, Caroline rang every morning to see was I still alive, which is actually quite important as well.
Yeah, So you kept, the connections were kept up there.
They were huge.
Yeah, good. Finian, you had probably a very different experience to a lot of people in that you were kind of retiring at the beginning of all this, but you essentially then became a home carer for your daughter, Cliona. And this is an experience, and we've been talking about it again the last few days because the home carers have been talking. This was an experience that a lot of people had around the country. So tell us how that happened and about like how Cliona's life changed.
Yeah. Well, essentially what happened was when the lockdown happened, now just for the first 2.5 months, I was actually acting as minister as well. So I had to go in and out of the cabinet meetings. But I deliberately did that to keep the issue of disability on the agenda and to make sure that the people were put from the disability sector into the subgroups within NPHET. But for me as a parent, and like thousands of people, I'm not just talking about myself, I'm talking about the parents of families of people with disability, it was an extremely difficult time, Brendan, for us all, and particularly for the person themselves with the disability. We've heard a lot of talk in the last couple of days about the carers and families, and that's very part of the debate. But my focus always was, even when I was minister, was we need to focus, we need to stop thinking of the HSE, the Minister for Disabilities, the Department of Health. We need to focus on the person with the disability.
So Cliona's life, up to then, Cliona had a life and a routine.
day had the day services. And the first catastrophe, well, first of all, the first big issue was there was a fear when they started talking about vulnerable adults and the COVID, and the young adults with disabilities could be under more pressure than the rest of us. So that was the first. So that fear was logged in our own brain.
Yeah.
But the big issue
and
then.
And people with Down syndrome, would have kind of tend to have respiratory issues and stuff like that. So there was a fear there.
50% of them would have serious issues as well.
Yeah,
50% now also are fairly good, like Clean and myself in my own situation. But there are 50% of Down syndrome children and adults with other serious
and who have
health
conditions, and all kinds of things. Yeah.
But just to say, the first tsunami then to hit us was the closure of the day services. Because we were into the routine. She went off in the morning at 8:30, came home at the evening at 3:30, 4:00. So then that was completely closed down. And then when you think about it at the time, in Ireland, we have 23,000 people in day services. And all of a sudden that was stopped. Yeah. That was really tough on the people.
And this is Clina's social outlet and her pals and her everything else.
And it's a big, huge factor in their lives and routine and stability and service. So a lot of the children are young adults with disabilities became very obsessed, very upset, very stressed. There was a lot of meltdowns in the family and they really missed the routine, they really missed the interaction and they really missed the staff and the day services.
And so
that was
you were everything to Clina then at that point, you were her world. Yeah,
I was there. No, I had the support of my other daughter, Caoimhe, and her family and friends and neighbours. I was having a bit of a smile there with Rosie, she talked about. I had fantastic neighbours, the Hayes and the Perrys, that delivered dinners.
Good grub,
great grub actually, four-star grub. But to go back to the core issue, yes, it was very, very hard on the young person with a disability and they became very stressed. We had a lot of meltdowns, a lot of situations. Now, her service did provide a couple of Zoom calls a week, but I'm not into Zoom calls and it didn't work for children with adults with disabilities.
Yeah,
and the second point I'd say is that now they did often call and bring her off for a 1 hour walk, etc. Her key workers area used to do that kind of stuff. That was helpful. But the bottom line was it's only when it began to reopen later on, they reopened slowly. They opened 2 or 3 days a week for a few months and then eventually now they're back to 5 days a week. But the main thing is it was very traumatic for the people with disabilities and their families and carers.
And is Clean a setback, do you think?
I
know you'd hate to think that. But
no, but I do, and I do, and I think a lot of primary school children, because I'm a former teacher myself before I ever got involved in politics, and I just saw the impact on children and younger people as well, and particularly with the adults and children with disabilities. So the direct answer is yes. I do think has had a huge negative impact in her development, in her attitude. Has it increased anxiety? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is she fretting a lot more than she was 3 years ago? The answer is yes.
And it's hard to get that. It's hard to pull that back.
Yeah,
then, isn't
it is hard.
And I know that's a result of years and years of work by so many people, and you to get Clina to the point she got to. Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Olivia, like talking to Finian there about Clina, and we've been talking a bit today and yesterday and this weekend, I suppose, about that it was tough on the young. It was very tough on your age group as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was because, you know, I was down in Greig na Mana, so I wasn't in touch with my friends in Dublin. And I missed that very much. And I was thinking things like, will I ever go to France or Italy again? Like, it's 2 years since I've been out of the country now. will I ever go for a swim in a warm sea again?
Yeah.
All the places that I haven't been that I'd love to go. And the years ticking away. You know, suddenly at my age, I'm into my 70s, you're looking at a very foreshortened future. And most of your life is behind you. And you're beginning to think, oh, God, I've never been to Moscow. I've never been to St. Petersburg. You know, I want to go. And am I going to be stopped from doing that? And yet knowing that because I'm a borderline asthmatic, for me to go tearing out there and taking chances isn't a great idea. And I'd end up being, a burden for everybody else. But I was very suddenly conscious of how short the life that's left to me is and how precious it is. So there was a little bit of me that did resent having to be at home and having to be careful, while at the same time being really grateful for all the people who made it possible for me to do that when other people had to go out and face all the dangers. But there was that little bit of me thinking, what if I die and I've never been to Moscow?
Yeah. And if this is it, if this is how it ended, if this is how your story ended, like in the middle of all of this, I can imagine. Rosaline, did you, and not to be offensive to you or anything, but did you have that sense as well, that, as my father would say, time is not on your side?
Well, sure. Yes, one of the things I think a lot of people of my age felt, they planned to do all the things they wanted to do, like Olivia says, travel and all. But I had sort of seen myself, I had heard when I was very young about Margaret Mitchell, the woman who wrote Gone with the Wind. She had never written anything, but she got very ill and she had to go into hospital and she couldn't do anything in hospital except write. And she wrote Gone with the Wind. And I thought, that's what I'll do. Now, Marion, for all, skip over normal people, the lot, I'm going to write Gone with the Wind. And of course, I didn't write even a page of Gone with the Wind. So that was a disappointment.
Was there any, did you do any great project at all? We all had these great plans to learn Swahili and all this kind of
well,
stuff.
Well, I did learn, with the aid of my son, I did learn 2 pages of a piece that I'd learned at school, The Field Nocturne, and he sent it to John O'Connor in Florida to listen to it. I only got page 1 and 2. Maybe I'll get page 3 and 4. And I also picked up the harp again, and I tried to, I'm trying to learn it again. And I tried to learn a Shakespeare sonnet, which was almost impossible.
You're putting a lot of people to shame here. How many people can say, casually, I picked up the harp again? Finian, did you have any great project? Did you finally learn to sing or anything, Finian? No,
I didn't learn to sing, Vernon, but I had 3 projects, actually. Yeah. I had loads of time to go back to my guitar, which I really enjoy. And yeah. I had planned to... Like, you know, I play a little guitar, but I had planned to develop it further and go to proper lessons and all that stuff. But in the meantime, okay, while I was waiting during the COVID, I did play a bit more guitar at home. And that was one thing. Second project I got involved in was, just to keep myself sane, was we set up in St. Vincent's GAA Club in Reno, the GAA, the All-Stars, a group of disabled kids involved in Gaelic games. That was great crack. We had a
Fantastic.
Couple of great Friday
yeah.
evenings, outdoor event. We just was rock and roll. And then the third thing I got involved in my local football club in Shelburne. I joined the board of managing down there, and that's another project. So they okay. were kind of things that kind of, I needed to do something. I learned that lesson because the first few weeks during the lockdown, what I noticed was there was the kind of silence, there was the peace. We all kind of slowed down.
Yeah.
And there was the good weather at that time, do you remember? And yeah. we were kind of around the gardens and all that. And there was a kind of a
and
lovely
the silence.
Calming.
Yeah.
The silence, yes.
Yeah.
And the calming
yeah.
effect. So it was during that period then I said, right, I know I'm not going to be sitting around here for the rest of my life. I've left frontline politics, but I'm not going to be sitting around listening to radio programmes like yourself. And I don't think I'm going to be out there rock and roll in the
okay.
future. So I got involved in those 3 projects.
So
and we
you
had great
don't
crack.
Sound like the kind of person, you didn't turn in yourself, get lonely or depressed or any of that. Are you kind of a more get on with it kind of individual, yeah?
My nature would be that. But the sadness and all that comes from the people around me that I feel are hurting. That is the one thing that kind of does kind of have a negative impact on me. So if I have a crisis, I normally want to do something to deal with the crisis and to deal with myself emotionally and psychologically. So I did the Vincent's thing, Shelburne thing, and a bit of music and a bit of rock and roll.
So do something, act
yeah,
your
yeah,
way out
yeah.
of it. Yeah, yeah. Olivia, I think a lot of people are now dealing with the prospect of kind of re-entry in various ways and everything. Do you think it's going to be hard for a lot of slightly older people to reconnect again and to get back out there?
You're very diplomatic. People like me, you mean. Yeah, I think that is the case.
We're not far behind you, Olivia.
I know, but listen, I went into Greignamana last night. It's a town of about 1,500 people, and it has loads of pubs, as all villages do. But last night, between 7 and 8 o'clock, 7 of those pubs were open. You could look in and see the lights and the glasses glistening and people starting to go in there. And you were driving along, you know, little medieval streets in Greignamana, and all this yellow light falling out of these different pubs. And it was exactly like that Van Gogh painting of the cafe on the terrace in Arles, where you have the dark sky with a few stars and then all this yellow light spilling out. Mm. And life and promise
of life and things to come and enjoyment and being together. And it was all there, driving through the town. And I remember thinking, you know, this is fantastic, but I know that it'll be a while before I go into a pub because they have got rid of the COVID pass. And this I don't understand.
Okay.
I mean, if the idea is to allow Omicron to run wild so we all get herd immunity, and it may be the case that that's actually
like Micheál Martin was asked this the other night by one of the journalists, are you giving people permission to go out and get Omicron? And he was very categoric that they're not. But I suppose the feeling is 95% of the people in the pub are going to have a vaccine anyway, aren't they?
Well, they are. But I still think that the COVID pass was an incentive for people to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
And it's the vaccination that is stopping the whole health service getting overwhelmed and all the rest of it. So that's
and a comfort as well, obviously, Olivia, for people like you to go back out there. You'd feel more comfortable if you felt that was still in place, would you?
Much more comfortable, you know, going into a concert or, because that's one of the big things I've missed, or a play, to know that we had to present COVID passes. Yeah, that would have comforted me. So I'll be wary.
Yeah. Do you feel set back? Do you feel much older after the last 2 years?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I do. And because there's 2 years of life not lived. And parties not gone to. And the joy of people, the champagne of people, and the ideas that you bounce off when you're with people that you don't when you're living life through a mirror, which is what we've been doing for the last 2 years. So I feel like people must have felt during the war, and I won't look back on it with any joy. I won't want to look back on it. I'll be like the people who lived through a war. Let's not talk about
Let's
move on. Yeah.
Rosaline, I hope this isn't indelicate to bring this up, but you just about remember the actual war slightly, don't you? Are any parallels?
Well, not really. The big thing I remember is being put in my pram underneath the stairs in Appian Way by my daddy during the bombing in the North Strand. I think I remember that. Well, I have to laugh at Olivia O'Leary. I really do.
Go on.
To me, I'm going to upstage her now. To me, she's only a kid. What is she talking about being old? What is she talking about being old? That is nonsense. And I have to say that we all know all the people who suffered incredibly and worked so hard. But the ones I really felt terribly sorry for, looking back on my own life, were the ones who are just starting out from school on their lives and romance and everything. I mean, they've an awful lot of kissing to catch up with.
Yeah.
Because between 18 and 20, I have glorious granddaughters and they were sitting like nuns at Christmas, you know. Take your wimple off. They're absolutely ridiculous.
Brendan,
I think it was stinking for them.
Yeah, Olivia, yeah.
Could I just say one thing? Because, you know, there are things we have to learn from what happened. And the big thing we have to learn, I think, immediately is congregated settings for older people. We have to do something about that.
Okay.
We know now that they were the ones that really suffered. So many people that I know died in that thing. And we have been told for years that we have to decongregate those big nursing homes. For God's sake, let's at least learn that lesson.
And there's so many amazing models and ideas out there for how we do this and kind of schemes where people gradually kind of have less independence as they go along, but the supports are there for them to live independent lives and everything. And it does feel like we're stuck in the 70s or something with that a bit, Finian, doesn't
it? Yeah, it does, yeah. But just on that point, a very important point about congregated settings, that's something that when I was Minister for Disabilities that that I was involved in taking people out of bigger institutions and putting them into smaller community homes. And that actually, during the COVID, we've all learned lessons from that the amount of deaths in congregated, larger congregated settings than the smaller group, 4 or 5 adults in a small community home were less, and there was less illness in those smaller communities. So we've learned a lesson from that, from a health point of view. Now, from a genuine human rights point of view, etc., we should be increasing the decongregation of these settings for adults from institutions with disabilities, and that's something that's going on.
Yeah.
When I was there for 4 years, we managed to move 500 or 600 people out of it.
You're taking away people's agency as well, like, and sure, that's a recipe for people getting older really fast, or for people who have special needs getting more dependent and everything.
Yes.
Rosaline, did you feel you got a bit more dependent? Because you seem like a fiercely independent woman. Did you get a bit more dependent on people in the last 2 years? And was that uncomfortable?
I think the word you're searching for is needy.
Okay.
And yes, probably, but I've tried to fight it.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to be actually dragged out to do a show, which nearly killed me because, but never mind. I quote Jimmy Carter's wife, every time I think I'm getting old and gradually going to the grave, something happens.
You'll bounce back all right?
I don't think I think my bouncing days are over. With a bit of luck, I might get another bounce out of it.
Listen, you sound like you're bouncing already. By the way, Rosine, you wanted to mention Luke O'Neill. I believe you were a great fan
indeed.
Fan of his analysis, was it?
His guitar playing.
I said to my neighbour across the wall about 2 months ago, you know, I said, I sort of fancy Luke O'Neill, and she raised an eyebrow and said, Rosaline, you should get out more.
I found myself fancying her at one stage, and sure, I'm not even that way inclined. So, yeah, I think we all fell for Luke.
Down.
By the way, Rosaline, not the only text here about this, but I'll read one of them. May I say thank you to Rosaline as her late, late performance of the soap song cheered me up several times during the lockdown. A friend sent it to me and I played and replayed it often. So you weren't Luke O'Neill, but you did your bit for people in the pandemic.
Yes, I did.
Olivia, on a broader kind of a note, and again looking forward, I think Leo Varadkar has talked about this at times, about the possibility of a more seasonal living for a while, depending on how this all works out. You kind of agree with him, do you, that that could be the way of it?
Well, just looking at the facts and what's happened, you would begin to think that way, that we would start to hibernate in the winter and that in the summer we would live, that the universities and the schools would be open so kids could be at school, that we would go to the concerts and the plays and have the festivals, you know, all during the summer, and then put to the winter those things that can be done online. Because if you look at the last 2 years, that's exactly what's happened. We have lived in the summertime.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, you know, the blanket came down in the wintertime and back in we went again. So it would seem to make sense, particularly if this continues, that suddenly we will be, you know, adopting just a different way of life, because the things we can get done in the summer are massive. The amount of living we can do are massive. Now, if that means that we end up sleeping 12 hours a day in the wintertime to make up for it all, you know, perhaps. But wouldn't that seem to make sense?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
A very great idea. And just have pyjamas. Don't have any clothes.
Okay, so Rosie Lennon's going full hibernation for 6 months of the year now, around in a onesie, obviously. Okay, there's a cautious, older, wiser listener here says, I'm so happy that this is over for now. I will go out more and see family while I can. Bring it on. And look, we're all going to be cautious. We know it's not over, but I think bring it on. Let's live a little bit. Rosaline, just a text here for you before we go. Somebody here says, not just the young people who need to get back to kissing. I separated just before COVID after years in the relationship. I too feel like I have a lot of kissing to catch up on. So there you go. There's going to be all kinds of carry on.
Brendan,
for the next one.
Have you got his number, please?
Okay. Listen, guys, thank you all so much. Yep. Olivia O'Leary, Finian McGrath and Rosaline Linehan. And we'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.